Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Yesterday marked the first day of public hearings for the impeachment inquiry regarding President Donald Trump. South Dakota Public Broadcasting is airing the public hearings live on SDPB Radio and SDPB TV. We offer complete live coverage of that of those hearings beginning tomorrow again at 8 a.m. Central on SDPB Radio. Coverage also live on SDPB to World and on our website sdpb.org/PBS News Hour. We'll repeat PBS News Hour's special coverage Friday at 6 p.m. Central and on SDPB to World and other, and also NPR offers a special report Friday night at 7 p.m. Central, 6 Mountain on SDPB Radio. So lots to keep up with there. But we'd like to turn today here on In the Moment to some local perspective. Lisa Hager is an assistant professor of political science at South Dakota State University, and David Wiltsey is an associate professor of political science at South Dakota State University, and they're both joining us now from the Janine Basinger studio. Lisa, welcome.
Thanks. Thanks David, for having us.
Welcome as well, David.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Well, there's a lot to unpack here. And, you know, people have been unpacking it on NPR for quite some time. But I'm also curious if South Dakota listeners have questions they would like to ask the professors here. They can email us inthemoment@sdpb.org, and we'll see if we can get some of their perspective. Dr. Hager, let's start with you. Give us some idea of some of the key moments that you thought from yesterday's hearings that stood out.
Mm-hmm. I think really kind of the big takeaway was the fact that Bill Taylor really revealed that one of his staffers did overhear a phone call between the U.S. ambassador to the European Union, Gordon Sondland, and then President Trump the day after the call that we heard about between Trump and the Ukrainian president. And so, you know, there the staffer, you know, mentioned that, you know, that they had felt like they had heard that there was some evidence of some sort of quid pro quo relationship that was occurring between Ukraine launching investigations and the United States releasing that aid.
And why did this information just, why was that news made yesterday?
This is really like the first opportunity for anyone to really hear publicly what has been getting said. And so, you know, it's possible that maybe some of this information had been disclosed in the closed door hearings and what have you. But this is really kind of the first opportunity that we did get to hear that publicly.
Right. And why is it significant in the sense that they say that President Donald Trump's response in that conversation, which was overheard, which was loud enough to be overheard by the State Department staffer, was that the president cared more about the investigation of Joe Biden, which Giuliani was pressing for, is the quotation mm-hmm. that I have in mm-hmm. front of me. That seems like a pretty significant detail.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, it definitely is significant. I think kind of the one caveat with some of this is just the fact that they weren't able to necessarily report per se specifically that it was exactly being put across as really a quid pro quo exchange. It was more that, like, it was clear that there would be a stalemate with the funding if there wasn't an investigation launched. And so, obviously, like, there's some assumptions that can be made there and some takeaways that, you know, both parties are going to have from that comment. You know, the Democrats are really going to see that sort of conversation and comment meaning exactly what they were saying all along, was that there was this quid pro quo exchange where Republicans are saying, well, that's just really kind of their interpretation of that particular conversation. That doesn't necessarily mean that what was the takeaway, because it is something that's just being overheard.
Right.
I would add, go ahead. Yeah. Another really important thing besides the content of the call was the fact that this call was made in the first instance on a cell phone in a semi-public place, where the EU ambassador was having a conversation with the president directly, mm-hmm. Which is just a huge breach of security protocols that we normally have in these kinds of conversations. So it just highlights how this entire operation on the side, outside of the normal diplomatic channels, really was a serious breach of the norms in how we go about conducting foreign policy.
So according to NPR, multiple congressional sources have identified David Holmes as the aide And he is scheduled to testify in a closed-door session on Friday. Unclear whether he'll testify in open session. Can either of you explain to me, like, what, when those decisions are being made about closed-door versus open-door in this process?
Mm-hmm. So, for the most part, the congressional investigation into the possible impeachment has really just been put together through the resolution that was passed, really kind of launching the investigation formally. And so that kind of just outlines what this impeachment inquiry will actually look like. So obviously, up until this point, the closed door impeachment inquiry procedures are really criticized because that resolution hadn't actually been approved yet by the House. Obviously, even once the resolution did go through, they were attacked for still putting through the resolution and going forward with the inquiry and things like that. Basically, it's just giving Congress the opportunity to kind of lay out how they're actually going about this. So we know that the House Intelligence Committee will be conducting public hearings and then writing a report setting forth its findings and any recommendations that can then go to the House Judiciary Committee and eventually be made public. And so at this point, it's really just the House kind of deciding when they want to have things be private and when they want things to be public.
And what about this notion of hearsay, that there's a lot of things that are being overheard and then reported? Republicans are criticizing Democrats heavily for this. Any teeth to that criticism that, you know, when you compare it to what most of us understand about what happens in a court of law, hearsay is not even admissible? At least on TV.
Yeah. And I think, like, that's the thing here, is that we have to remember that this is a political proceeding and not a legal proceeding. And I think some of that has been conflated at times when the impeachment inquiry has been getting talked about. And so this is still very much political. So when there are charges of hearsay, it, you know, is just the nature of politics, unfortunately, at this point. And so I think, really, we just need to wait for all of the information to come out and to see really how the House moves forward with this. You know, if this is kind of all of the information that we ever get and the Democrats in the House choose to go forward with articles of impeachment and pass them, then everything will go over to the Senate. And then we'll kind of see what happens from there.
And in this particular instance, it's not hearsay to say that you overheard a conversation with somebody else. I'm sitting here listening to you and Lisa discuss something. That's something I'm hearing directly. So it's not technically hearsay in this particular instance. And, you know, the Democrats are being very careful about who they're bringing into the committee and who they're having testifying. I mean, we can be fairly certain that they are not going to be bringing witnesses in to answer questions that they already haven't corroborated with other witnesses. So we will hear from people in meetings to come that will be able to corroborate most of what they're bringing in. Otherwise, they wouldn't have proceeded this far. So far, they're being very careful about this, and Adam Schiff is a former prosecutor. He knows how to put this kind of case together and how you slowly aggregate all this information into a solid case that reaches some threshold of evidence.
Right. And yet they're trying to do so on a fairly tight timeline. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But first, are there things that stood out to you? And Dr. Wiltsie, we can start with you, that of the accusations made against the president are sort of making the strongest grounds for articles of impeachment. What stands out as the strengths of the Democrats' arguments?
Mm-hmm. Well, so far, I think the most important things we learned yesterday was most of the facts that were brought out through the whistleblower inquiry are being slowly corroborated by these two witnesses, by these two folks who were in at various points of this conversation and certainly affected by the consequences of this conversation. I mean, we learned that, yes, this military and security aid was clearly delayed, conditioned on the investigation of the Bidens, that the Three Amigos and Giuliani had no interest in broader probes of Ukrainian corruption beyond what was relevant to the Biden investigation. And that there was this very clear breach of norms going outside of normal diplomatic channels and the decision-making apparatus that we have put in place to carefully vet and prepare policy and policy decisions for the president to make. Mm.
Professor Hager, anything you want to add to that as far as the what you feel the strongest arguments were from yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, I would really tend to agree with my colleague when it comes to just the fact that we're finally hearing these two witnesses really, you know, say this is in fact what we hear, and just kind of like confirm what has actually been set up until this point in a public forum.
Yeah. Does this get at the idea of the argument about whether or not they should reveal the name of the whistleblower or the whistleblower should come forward? David, are you getting at that when you say, you know, these things are these people who are coming forward publicly and putting their names and faces, you know, in front of the cameras, they're corroborating that complaint. Is it less relevant that we hear from the whistleblower or more relevant at this point?
I think a lot less relevant. You know, we have these whistleblower protections for a reason. And if you think back to Watergate, there were a number of informants, whistleblowers, et cetera, who we didn't learn their identities until decades after the Watergate scandal. I mean, we did not know that Mark Felt, the deputy FBI director, was Deep Throat until well after Richard Nixon had died and Felt was in his last days here. Last few years of his life. So we really don't need to have this person come in when we can verify and confirm almost everything that he or she has heard and brought forward in that complaint.
We do have a listener question here, and it is, President Clinton was impeached, but he did not leave office. So if President Trump is impeached, what will that really mean in terms of his service in public office?
Well, he didn't leave office because he wasn't removed by the Senate. Is the listener's question more along the lines of if he's voted out by the Senate and not leave?
I think what we're getting at here is let's spin forward and make some assumptions that the House does file mm-hmm. articles of impeachment. It goes to the Senate, and the Senate says, yeah, there's problems here. What is that procedure like in the Senate? Because does that mean we're not talking about a president necessarily leaving office at this point because we have
right.
precedent for it to not happen?
Mm-hmm. Right. And we've had two impeachments in the House where they have voted on and approved articles of impeachment and the Senate has not confirmed. But in both those cases, both President Johnson and President Clinton have had this asterisk next to their name. And this really is a stain on a person's legacy. So there are serious consequences in terms of the historical esteem that will be held for President Trump. I mean, this does hurt him long term, as it's hurt Bill Clinton.
And as I heard on NPR last night, this is the first time that this has happened this close to an election cycle. Do I understand that correctly? Where not only are we talking about his public service, but, you know, we are coming up on an election.
Certainly in the case of Clinton, it was prior to the it happened right during the midterm elections. I'm not so sure when Johnson's was.
Okay.
But that, yeah, that was a different era.
Yeah.
Elections were different.
Right.
So it's not not the same context.
Right. So he could be impeached and he could still, you know, stay out his term. And Nixon resigned.
Yes,
be reelected.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's talk about that public opinion then, because mm-hmm. when we were looking at the support that he may or may not have in the Senate, it's early with these public hearings, but the American people are the ones that are also the audience here, the jurors here in some ways, because of how they respond to that. Talk about that a little
right.
bit, if you will.
Well, senators are certainly going to be taking cues from their electorates. Speaking of Republican senators here. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, both Republican senators and Republicans in the electorate, they're going to be waiting for some very clear evidence of a serious violation of public trust here before they are willing to go out on a limb and work against their party's interests in the upcoming election. And because we are so close to the election, this is probably going to make both senators and just average everyday voters, Republican voters, more resistant to moving forward against the president, because we are, you know, within a year of the election now. And that would be a serious handicap to the party if the president were to be removed shortly before an election like this, in the middle of the primary process.
Mm-hmm. What about for people who are fans of Vice President Mike Pence, who feel like, you know, is there any sense that Donald Trump could be seen as a liability, Mike Pence could be seen as a real strength for the party, and that if one goes, that you run into those fall 2020 elections with a really strong candidate?
I don't foresee a circumstance. Yeah. Well, I don't see a circumstance where the vice president could come out any better for this. Mm. You know, so far his name has come up a few times, that he has been, you know, somewhat aware of what's going on, but certainly not in the mix of things. But, you know, scandal has a habit of taking down a lot more people than just the individuals that are involved. And him, just by dint of being vice president, would certainly be harmed by this.
What about for Democrats? Because if this goes into the Senate, there are, I think, 5-6 you know, senators who would not be on the campaign trail in Iowa if they were sitting, you know, in impeachment hearings, and they're required to be there. How does it affect the Democrats going into primary season?
Well, for the few Democratic candidates, that would be that would hamper their electoral efforts on the campaign trail. But I would think most of them would take this as an opportunity to be center stage and to get a lot of visibility in the impeachment process itself. Mm-hmm. It's not as good as being in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and the other early states, but it is a pretty good substitute, I would imagine.
What are we looking to Friday and next week? And let's talk a little bit about the tone as well, because the tone was fairly what you would, you know, by and large, with a little bit of sarcasm sprinkled in. It was what you would expect from congressional hearings, measured, stately, a little boring.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're all hoping for. You know, those of us who remember the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, like, we're trying to avoid a major emotional spectacle, aren't we?
Right. And, you know, this expectation of politics being theater and having a kind of a theater critic approach to these hearings, it's not doing a service to the process. It's not doing a service to the country or democracy, really. I mean, this should be boring. We shouldn't expect fireworks. I mean, this is serious business. And the details of this are not going to be exciting.
Well, and thus far, what we've seen from both Taylor and Kent is their unwillingness to really engage in any sort of questions that would make the process have more drama and fireworks. So when they were asked questions relating to whether they believe that the president had engaged in an impeachable offense, they really threw that question back at the committee and said, you know, that's really something for you to determine, not for us. And so I think going forward, we'll probably see similar behavior from witnesses.
Yeah, Bill Taylor just clearly stated that.
Yeah.
That's
your
decision, not ours.
Right.
And the way that Schiff is running these hearings as opposed to earlier hearings, having attorneys ask these questions, you know, that is an important shift. And it does show the seriousness of this and a very conscious effort to kind of take down the circus atmosphere and show that this is a very serious process.
All right. Well, we hope to have you back on and help us walk through this from a South Dakota perspective as we go forward. Have you heard a lot of feedback from students and other faculty members, people in Brookings? How is it sort of playing out in South Dakota?
I think right now there's just quite a bit of interest because now we're actually having public hearings. And I think even just today and tomorrow, especially since I teach on Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, and the hearings were still going on yesterday while my students were in class, I think it will be more of a talking point with the students on Friday, at least for me, mm-hmm. and things like that. But so far, the reactions have really kind of been like, you know, what is kind of the key takeaways? I think some people are kind of wondering what that was. And so that's one of the things that we wanted to specifically highlight, but then also kind of like what's going forward and what does this all mean politically going into the next election?
Right. Yeah. And a lot of the questions we're getting are very mechanical. What's right. the process like?
Yeah. What happens next? What happens
what's the House role? What's the Senate role? Mm-hmm. And that sort of thing.
Yeah. We had that conversation this morning. What do we call this? You know, what is the language that mm-hmm. we're going to use? It's not an impeachment yet. You know, what? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's lots of those little details. We hope you'll come back maybe even next week to help us walk through this. Lisa Hager is an assistant professor of political science, and David Wiltsey is an associate professor of political science, all from South Dakota State University. They joined us from the Janine Basinger studio at SDSU. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
And SDPB offers complete live coverage of the House of Representatives public impeachment hearings beginning tomorrow at 8 a.m. Central Time on SDPB Radio. Coverage is also live on SDPB2 World and on our website, sdpb.org/PBS News Hour. We'll repeat PBS News Hour's special coverage Friday at 6 p.m. Central Time on SDPB 2 World. And NPR offers a special report Friday at 7 Central, 6 Mountain p.m. on SDPB Radio.